This week's episode of Lo-Fi Podcast is sponsored by No Wave Academy. At nowaveacademy.com, you can view an array of online workshops by some of today's best contemporary artists. Their instructors include Mia Bergeron, Paul Christina, Steve Kim, myself, Aaron Westerberg, and many more. So if you use this code at checkout, lofi-10, that's all caps, LOFI-10, you can get 10% off all online workshops. This is a great resource. They're very well done videos. They were fun to do. They're amazing to watch. And there's a ton you can learn by so many great artists. So take advantage of that while you can. Hello and welcome to episode 10 of Lo-Fi Podcast. I am John Wentz, recording conversations with artists, musicians, and filmmakers from my studio in Paris, France. Before we get started, just one thing to mention. So far, we've been a bi-weekly podcast, and from here on out, we're going to move to weekly. So every Wednesday, you can find an episode from your favorite streaming platform and on YouTube as well. And if you can, once again, rate and review, follow on Spotify, all these things that I never realized do help greatly. We have plans for the future that all these things would really make it much easier to achieve. So with that, this conversation was recorded on January 16th with my friend Arshan Nair from his website. Arshan Nair is a self-taught visual artist, illustrator, and digital artist specializing in mixed media, illustration, and digital art based out of Berlin, Germany. Arshan's visual expressions are part of a journey which is really influenced by the mysteries of our existence and how every action, emotion, and our interconnectedness in a universal scale sets off a chain of reactions which we experience from the micro to the macro scale. I hope you enjoy this conversation. Without further delay, Arshan Nair.
Oh man, with me I'm like super chill and open with anything, so you can put everything in. I mean, it can be absolutely the way it is, so with me everything is cool.
Okay, awesome, good to hear.
Yes.
So yeah, let's just go ahead and jump into it, man. I'm actually really excited to talk to you because I've been following you for a while, and then it was a couple months ago we connected because I started doing digital work, and then you started sending me tips, and then you were so cool to send that little demo that you forgot you sent. And I don't know, man, just you're just super cool about it.
Thanks, bro.
No, thank you. So first, can you just give yourself a brief introduction?
Yes. So my name is Arshan Nair, as you might have guessed from the title, and I'm a digital artist and illustrator based out of Berlin. I'm originally from India, but I moved to Europe about 3 years ago. And yeah, that's pretty much it. I've been painting, creating digital art and illustrations for about 14 years now. I started doing this in 2006, professionally and full time. And yeah, that's pretty much it. I just love creating so much. I'm super obsessed about exploring inner worlds and, you know, expressing that through my work, and I guess that's what reflects my work, my lifestyle, my persona, my family life. Everything revolves around that, and everything which happens with me physically also kind of like reflects that into my work and you know, my exploration of like the inner journey or the inner world. So yeah, bro. I mean, it's pretty amazing. I feel so blessed and so much gratitude, man, all the time. So I love it. I love creating. I just feel that it's such a big blessing and a gift.
How did you get started in India? Because what were you doing before you started digital art?
So my journey has been like pretty strange because, you know, like none of my family, like no one, even far remotely far in my family, my relatives, you know, like my father's side of the family or my mother's side of the family are creative at all. Like they're not creative in terms of like no one is into music, art, performance, acting, nothing. Like there's no creative connection at all. And you know, while I was growing up, I was it was like this middle class, upper middle class family lifestyle, which was predominantly influenced by the Western culture, because India is a very new, fresh, free country, you know, and like a lot of the influence which was happening, especially the pre-internet stage, was a lot of these influences from the Western culture, especially all these movies coming in and, you know, with like industries booming and stuff. So my family was more, you know, inclined towards, like, they were all engineers and doctors and scientists. Everyone from my family is like extremely educated and like super proficient in whatever they're doing. And they were all based out of the US, like all parts of the US or spread all across India. And while I was growing up, I had no exposure towards art or music or, you know, any kind of like cultural activity. The most I would see was just movies. You know, I used to watch a lot of movies while growing up, and I was really into storytelling. I used to love good storytelling since I was a kid. Dad was a businessman. He was doing really well in the textile industry. And that is what I saw him do. Like, his conversations revolved around that. And my mom was like a very simple homemaker. So we had a very simple life. And when like I was around 14 or 15, my dad passed away. Like, it was a sudden accident he met. He was actually murdered.
Oh, so, I'm sorry to hear that.
No worries, bro. So yeah, I mean, I was extremely close to him. So, you know, like my everything, like I was having a ball of a journey, like everything in life was amazing. And then everything just moved 360 degrees. Like, everything just toppled 360 degrees. Like, I saw everything which I wasn't supposed to experience was experienced in terms of financial situation, social situation, emotionally. It was a turmoil for the next 10 years. And that is when I started to recognize a lot of different patterns, you know, like initially I started questioning, why did this happen to me? Why isn't this happening to a lot of people? Why is this strange, you know, experience? Why did this just happen to me? And a lot of the things which followed after my dad passing away was extremely weird. And I was like, I started connecting the dots somehow, like over the years. I was like, why did this particular thing happen, which somehow connects with his passing away? And why it doesn't seem to be random. Nothing seems to be random, you know? And I started connecting the dots backwards over the next few years. And I was like, man, this is crazy. There's something beneath the surface. I definitely feel that what has been like conditioned into us, or, you know, whatever the society we live in teaches us, is really not it. There's something more beyond what reality is. And I started getting really fascinated by that. But it wasn't so serious by the time, like, I was around, I think, 19 or 20 or something. When I started working I joined my family business because my mom was taking care of that after my dad passed away. And I was supposed to, you know, join her and help her out with the business and stuff. And, like, by this time, I had no inclination towards art. I wasn't making art. And, you know, I just thought that this is my life. Like, I have to get into my family business because that's what we grew up looking at. And, you know, this is what I'm supposed to do. And that's like, that's my responsibility. And I joined in and I started learning stuff over there around textiles, around marketing, around production, designing clothes, stuff like that. And for about like 5 years, I was completely into it. I was immersed into it. I was doing a lot of production and client projects for brands in Europe, especially in Italy and France. And I used to visit these countries a lot. And while I used to visit during my free time, I used to check out all these local galleries and check out the art scene and go to music festivals and stuff. And my mind was blown. Like, my mind started opening up and I was like, holy shit, like, what? This gives me so much, I don't know, like, happiness. And I feel like I'm in an alternate dimension when I'm immersed around artists or, you know, just their works. And I was really, really inspired. It just used to disconnect me from all the hustle bustle of daily life. And then, you know, like, while I was in my family business, I was going about my daily stuff. I realized that, you know, I was not a very happy person. I feel that I'm a very positive person since I've been a kid. But I started to see that I shifted a lot. Like my mannerisms, my personality wasn't the way I wanted it to be, in the sense that I started becoming a very negative, a very stressed out person, even though I was earning a lot of money, but it wasn't just making me happy, man. And that frustration kind of led me to start creating. And what really happened was about 6 or 7 years down, when I was doing my family business thing, this was around 2006 beginning. I accidentally came across this site called DeviantArt. I don't know if you know about this site.
I remember DeviantArt. Yeah.
Yeah. So it used to be like really famous. This was just before I think Facebook just started, or Twitter and all these in social media sites. This site used to be like really big in terms of the artistic community. And I used to watch all these crazy, amazing artists doing such amazing work and posting them. And, you know, like I started like interacting with a lot of different people, doing a lot of different things. I used to just message them and ask, hey, I love your work. Can we do something together? I don't know, like some random messages. And one of these guys actually sent me his work. And he said, hey, Archan, if you want, you can just remix one of my works and just put it online. And what happened was that I had Photoshop installed. I think it was a very early version of Photoshop. And I just knew a bit about layers and just some tools, because I used to do like web design and stuff during my high school days, you know, just going for competitions and stuff. So I just opened Photoshop. I just did something for 5 minutes and I uploaded it into DeviantArt. And I got like 2 comments and people were like, wow, this is so cool. And this is so nice. And I was like, holy shit. Like, I just made something and someone just commented on it, who I don't even know. And this got me really, really, you know, excited. And what I started doing was every day, I used to just, sitting in my office, I used to just make something random in my computer and just upload it into DeviantArt. And I used to get like 1, 2, 3, 4 comments every day on each work. And for me, that was super exciting. I was like, man, this is so crazy. Someone is actually taking out time to see my work and they're appreciating it. And I'm creating something out of nothing and it just comes into life. And someone who's sitting somewhere around the globe out of all these 6-7 billion people is actually taking the time to see that. This is how cool is technology? How amazing is the internet that it's empowering someone like me to do this? And for me, like, this was the kickoff point. And I started doing this every day. And every day as I started doing this, I started becoming more obsessed with creating, you know. And by this time, I had no clue. I wanted to take this fully as my career, because like the culture I grew up in and the people I grew up around, and even like the culture in India at that time was not so much around creativity and, you know, doing a lot of artistic stuff. Like, art was never a career option. No one ever said that, oh, you can be an artist and earn a livelihood out of it. And for me, that was never an option. So I thought I'll just do this as a hobby. And I kept doing this because it was giving me so much joy. And as I was doing this so much more, I just fell so much in love. I just became so obsessed, so much so that I was sitting in office during my meetings. I was painting in front of people. I used to come back home, not sleep. You know, my wife and my son was newly born at that time, and I never used to sleep. I used to sleep at like 3 or 4 in the morning, just creating art and learning things and learning new things and seeing more artists, what everyone is doing, and just trying to understand from what everyone's doing. There were not many podcasts or YouTube channels and stuff. So I could just see visually what people were doing and try to replicate or get inspired from say a stroke or a technique, you know, just trying to understand. It was like solving a mathematical equation for me. And for me, that was exciting because I was completely zoned out. I was not in that physical realm of doing this and solving day-to-day boring problems of my business and stuff. So I was not sleeping and I was just so obsessed. And about 6-7 months later, bro, I was sitting one day alone in my office. And I always had these moments of realization, you know, like I used to always talk to myself and just ask deeper questions about reality and life. And so I was in a juncture where I was obviously contemplating my dad's death and the journey after that and all the struggles I had and everything, and how they all beautifully synchronized with each other. They were all it seemed that they were all meant to be. But at the same time, I also asked myself that by the time I turn 40 or 50, and I look back into life and I ask myself at that point that, hey, Archan, what is it that you've earned your entire life? What would your answer be? And looking at the current circumstances, my only answer was luxury, money, and material wealth. And that freaked me out, bro. Like, as if, like, it was as if someone just punched me so hard on my face. Like, it was like the most shocking moment of my life. It was like, what am I doing? I never even asked myself, what the hell am I doing? Like, am I even doing something which has a purpose, which has a deeper meaning? I've just been doing stuff which people just, or, you know, the circumstances just made me do. Like, I was just pushed into the situation and I never questioned this. It's like I was in a rat race, you know, like I was just running blindly. And I was like, man, it can't be. Like, we are such incredible sentient beings. We are so powerful and wise and intelligent. And it can't be that we are all here just to be in this kind of rat race. I just clearly felt that our purpose here, or our mission here as human beings, is to help each other, to serve, to inspire, to learn from each other, and to contribute to the society in some way. And I felt I need to do that, no matter what it takes. I mean, that was like the shake-up moment. And I was like, how can I do that? Like, what is the best way I can contribute to the society? Because I don't want that answer. When I grow 50, 60 years, I don't want luxury money to be my answer. I mean, that can follow. I mean, I'd be blessed and I have gratitude if I have that. But I want to have a deeper impact in the society. And I was like, how can I do that? And I can do that through what I love. And what do I love? I love creating. And so I want to create. So, you know, like, just that spark just happened, like, boom, like it was clear, bro. Like, I felt that there was some higher power which channeled through me at that time. You know, like, I was definitely, it was not something just like a mind thing. I could clearly see that there is some higher energy which is inspiring me to do this. And I called up my wife and I was like, man, you know, like, I just thought about this and I want to do this. I want to quit my family business and I want to just paint all the time. This is what I want to do. This is what I've meant to do. And she was like, yeah, come home and we'll talk about it. And she thought that, you know, it's one of those moments where I get extremely hyper and excited about something and it'll die off in a few moments. So I went back home and I started having conversations with her. And, you know, like, I started talking to her and she was extremely supportive. She was like, yeah, man, like, if you feel like doing it, just do it, but be sensible and, you know, just don't make any stupid mistakes. Take it, just calculate it a bit and, do your stuff accordingly. And I started bouncing off this idea with my friends. I started discussing this with my family, my friends, and most of the people were extremely discouraging, man. Not like in the way that they wanted to discourage me, but they had no other opinions or maybe exposure towards life, because, I mean, I think everyone is shaped up from their own journey. So everyone started saying that, hey, you know, do this as a hobby. How will you earn? You're doing so well for yourself. You know, like, just do this side by side. And man, like, I was not in a very good state of mind getting all these opinions for about a month from people saying that, you know, do this, do that. I was like, no, I just feel like I need to do this, you know, because this is a calling from within. And of course, it's not easy. It's I have to start everything from scratch, but it sounds so exciting. I want to do this. So I ultimately, after a month, I did not listen to anyone basically. And I just came down to 2 points. Okay. So if I don't take a switch right now, what is the worst which will happen? I'll fail. I might not earn. I might not be able to feed my family. I'll try again. Something will work out. You know, I'm sure something will work out. If it doesn't work out, say after a few years, if I keep failing, I can go back to my family business. I have that, you know, I can start that from scratch again as well. And, you know, something will work out. But what if I don't do this? What happens if I don't do this? If I give in to my fears and, you know, my anxiety, and I just go for, if I don't listen to my heart and if I just keep continuing with my business, what happens then? I'll have regrets. So 20 years or 30 years down the line, I'll have such strong regrets that, man, you had the chance, you didn't do it. At least you could have failed, but you would have tried, you know, like, you would have experienced the journey a little bit. So for me, it was like two things, either failing or regrets. And I was not really afraid of failing because I failed in so many things already. So I was like, what the hell, you can try again. But I didn't want to have regrets, man. Like, that was something which I was like, whatever happens, whatever the outcome is, no regrets in life, you know, no regrets in this journey. So I'm going to go for it. Let's see what happens. And so, of course, like, I just did not, it's not so rosy as well, because of course I had some kind of backing for about, so I had made my calculations. I was like, okay, I have some amount of money, which I have savings. And if I don't even earn anything for a year, I can still make my family happy. I can pay my bills, everything for a year. And I have a year to like set up some kind of base to at least jump from there, you know, and see what happens. So I had some reserve in terms of money, so I could take that as a backup and start off from there. So I did my calculations. I made everything set up in a nice way, and I just jumped into it, man. And 2007, January, I remember very clearly, I got a new iMac. And on the first floor of my house, I had two floors. So I had this room which was empty, which was basically a room where I grew up. And I converted that. I took down everything, in all the furniture, everything, made it completely empty, and set up this beautiful desk and set up my computer there, and I started working. Had no clue about what's going to happen. How is the journey going to be? I had no clue about the art industry. How am I going to sell my work? Or what am I going to do? How am I going to get clients? But I was just so excited about the pure love and drive to create, that I could not see anything, man. And bro, that was the best decision of my life. Like, I'd still say the decision to create, the decision to follow my heart and just to create, was so, I'm so grateful, man. I'm so extremely grateful. I'm so blessed that I had this opportunity and I had the strength to jump to it and make this happen. And it's been a beautiful, beautiful journey. I just have no regrets at all, man. Touch wood.
That is amazing.
Thanks. Yeah, wow. It's been amazing. Yes.
Yeah. So I wonder, I mean, there's so much that comes up with that, but one of the first things I wonder is, since then, since that point, were there any situations or roadblocks that came up that made you question the decision?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Really? Absolutely. How do you deal with those?
Absolutely, bro. I think I remember so clearly initially, like, I used to see all these other creative people, especially people, artists who were established in, say, the West Coast of the US or in Europe. And I used to see how they used to work. And I used to see, like, a lot of artists either used to work through galleries, or they had representatives, or some of them used to work through agencies. And and you know, like, they were working with some amazing clients. So for me, it was very important that, you know, like, I sustain my family. Like, that was the main thing. Like, I didn't want to let them down. But at the same time, I really wanted to stay true to my core, which is to create and to learn. And I remember the first year was really, really difficult, especially because I had no clue. And what really happened was that I was doing a lot of my personal art, which, I mean, I would never show to my earlier work is so bad, bro. Like, it's so bad. Like, when I look at it right now, I'm like, how the hell was I doing it? And I used to love it. I used to love it so much at that time. I was like, wow, how did I make this? You know, this is next level and this is amazing. And of course, I used to see other artists and be like, holy shit, like, I have to reach, I have to like push myself. I have to like get better. I have to practice more, etc. I remember all those thoughts, like very immature kiddish, like thoughts used to run at that time. But I remember that, you know, like, I was trying to figure out how everything works, not just in terms of the industry, but also how I would like to design my life. So I remember I used to like contact all these brands. So I used to get all these magazines like Vogue and GQ and all that. And I used to see all these brands who used to advertise in the magazines. I used to call them up and be like, hey, you know, like, I'm a designer, blah, blah, blah. I'm an artist and I'm going to send you my portfolio. Would love to work. And most of them never used to respond or, you know, get back. I think I used to like do this every day. Like, I used to fix like 3 hours every day and just do this marketing, trying to meet people and show them my work. And I realized that like a lot of people who I was contacting were not interested. Number one, because they would only get in touch with you because they're interested. So I was like, man, this is not how my industry used to work before. You know, just getting in touch with clients was much more simpler than how when you are a creative person. And secondly, what started happening was that I was putting up a lot of work online. So I was getting a lot of inquiries. Like, every day I was getting like 10 or 15 emails asking me to produce any kind of work, man, like graphic design, illustrations, everything, you know, like, And I used to say yes, yes, yes to everything because I just wanted to figure out. And I was like, I don't want the money which I've saved to go down. Like there has to be some kind of surplus. So I was saying yes to everything. And I started noticing that I became a creative factory rather than doing what I really set out to do. So after a year, I started noticing that I was doing the exact same thing I was doing before in my family business, which was basically producing work in a large amount of quantity rather than focusing on like quality work. It was just that the product had changed. And I was like, man, this is not what I want to do. You know, like I just want to do the kind of work I want to do. And I want that the clients I collaborate with also hire me for the work they see in my portfolio, not just anything else. Because most of the work which I was doing for them was being dictated by them. And there was no input from my side or hardly an input from my side. It was mostly like they used to show me some kind of visual or had a particular brief. And there was no like particular co-creation happening. And for me, that was like, I mean, I was, of course, taking a lot of work and the pay was very less. But at the same time, there was no satisfaction in terms of the creative satisfaction. So after a year, I reevaluated how I want to go ahead in my journey. I realized that, okay, the 1 year I've tested out a little bit, things how they happen. Now I want to do things in my own way. And of course, it's not going to happen overnight, but at least I need to set the intention there. So what I started doing was I started saying no to people. So inquiries used to come. I used to see which ones, like I used to receive briefs. And I used to see, okay, this one looks exciting. This one seems interesting. So I started saying no to the ones which I've completely felt is off the track and yes to projects which I felt would be in line with what I want to do. And that is how like I kind of carved my own way the next few years in doing projects which were in alignment with the kind of work I really wanted to do, which made me learn more, which made me challenge more, and you know, which were creatively extremely satisfying. And it took me a few years, I would say 3 to 4 years to really get there. But it was like a very slow but very conscious effort in doing that. And I think it went very parallel to building my work, like improving my work and, you know, like focusing on the quality of my work and learning more, going deeper into my craft. And I think that was simultaneously helping building my work. And, you know, when people were looking at my work, they were like, okay, so he's doing this kind of style. So we would probably want to hire him for this. So I think it slowly started becoming my own space and people started contacting me for that. That was one of the initial challenges I feel was pretty interesting to deal with. Then the second challenge was where extremely connected to this one was, which somehow still happens sometimes now as well. I'm sure, I don't know how it happens for you, and I'm sure it happens to a lot of creative people as well. But initially I used to like, when I started being very selective about the projects, there were moments when I had a lot of work, say I was occupied for 2 or 3 months, and then I had no work for 2 or 3 months because I was saying no to projects. And I was like, so the amount of money I used to earn in those 2-3 months was enough for me to survive the next 2-3 months. But then sometimes I used to be like, okay, so where's the next project coming? I'm not sure if I'm going to get new projects, you know, shall I just say yes to this one because I need money? And sometimes I have, of course, I mean, but you know, those challenges were there as well, where you completely surrender to the unknown and I feel it was like more of a mind training for me, where I was trying to surrender more to the fact that the universe helped me get here. It's going to take care of me, you know, it's going to definitely create a path for me to, you know, to be able to learn, to grow, to understand myself and the world around me a bit more better. So I'm sure it's going to work out. It's not going to be difficult. So I had those bouts of anxiety and insecurity and, you know, stress around where's the next project going to come. But I think that's what also fuels a creative person. You know, that's what drives you to create more as well. That's what pushes you as well. Because if it was all comfortable and nice and rosy, man, it would be so boring. So I feel that all these things they come in a package. The fact that you are able to live an amazing life by doing what you love, at the same time having these different, hiccups along the way, which is so interesting and makes the journey much more fruitful, I would say. So yeah, bro, it just keeps going this way. And I think one of the main focuses right now, like currently, is that how do I get better with my work? How do I keep, I mean, there's no problem with like creativity. Like I'm always creating all the time. So I never face those kinds of issues. I used to, but now the thing is, how do I improve myself? How do I go deeper? How do I contribute more to the society? How do I help inspire others? You know, how can I share my knowledge? So these are the things which I'm really focusing on now, and I'm trying to solve these things.
So at this time, I mean, that's so much to juggle when you're getting started. So you're immediately looking for work. You're also building your style. You're also learning techniques. And you started digital and you've stayed digital the whole time, correct?
Yeah. So I started completely digital. Like I was using
what
Photoshop.
What were you using in the beginning?
I was only using Photoshop because I think that was the only tool at that time. There was one other one, which I never used though for my professional work, which was called PaintShop Pro. I don't know if it still exists, but I used to use this before in my high school. So whatever I learned in Photoshop was because of PaintShop Pro. I learned stuff there and then I moved into Photoshop. And then initially the first year was just Photoshop and learning the tool inside out. And then what I started doing was that I got really fascinated with digital art, because what I felt with digital art was that a lot of the things which you cannot produce in the traditional medium, you can capture or recreate them digitally because of the kind of things, because it basically does not, it defies the laws of physics. So, you know, when you're basically creating in a virtual environment, in a virtual setup, which is digital, it's another dimension. So you can do so much more than what you can do traditionally. But what really happened was that I started getting bored after a year just using Photoshop. And I was like, how do I explore other things? Like, I want to really experiment and try out new things. And what I started doing was I started playing around with pens and markers and watercolors. And I started just abstract painting, you know, on canvases, on paper. And I used to scan them and take it on the computer into Photoshop. And then I used to paint over them. Or I used to start painting on Photoshop. And then I started printing them out, doing watercolors over, doing a lot of traditional stuff, then taking it back into the computer. And so I started experimenting a lot around with Photoshop and like digital tools and traditional tools. And then over the last 5 years, it's been more of a mix of Photoshop, ZBrush, Cinema 4D. And I use, of course, pens and markers and watercolors as well. And yeah, it's been a mix of 2D, 3D, and traditional medium. So I love playing around with different mediums and seeing what comes out of it.
Right. So actually, a lot of the work that you have, like on your website or on social media, is more, you could say, mixed media than it is, even though it's primarily digital. It's actually mixed media.
Yes. But so like the core of the work has always been digital, but because that's what's been the most fascinating for me, because I love using technology into my work, and I love that it opens up so many possibilities. But so I keep it revolved around digital, but then I keep playing around with different things, and I find it super fascinating, man. It's just amazing that, you know, like, it just, because I don't know, I'm not like a hardcore traditional painter. Like, if I have to paint traditionally, if someone would look at my work traditionally, like if 100% traditional painting, it'd be like, holy shit, this is crap. Like, you know, because of course my practice hasn't been that, but, and even like my sensibilities in terms of, having like a classical way of painting or stuff it's not there, because I've been self-taught. It's been a very alternative, awkward kind of way I've learned myself, because my brain doesn't work like that. I think my brain works in a more flowy, organic way. So you know, like I feel that just mixing different mediums kind of somehow opens up its own way. And I love the spontaneity of it, in the sense that it becomes very mysterious, the entire process. Like, I just don't know what's going to come out the next moment, you know. I'm not sure how it is when you paint. Do you actually know how it is when, like, do you clearly know what the how the painting is going to be? Like, do you have the image in your head completely, or is it very organic?
Now it's organic. I think in the beginning I definitely did, and mostly because I went to school for art. But this is something that's kind of gotten me in trouble, like in terms of working with galleries and stuff like that, is I get really, coming out of school, I went through kind of an existential crisis. I became very, very depressed for a couple of years.
Wow. Why is that?
Because I think the rigor of going through school and what I'd learned, it was a very traditional school. It took me a while to realize that's not what I was into. And I completely lost, not just in terms of working, but my senses, like what art that I liked. And I left school. Like when I entered school, I was very much into like juxtapose art, skateboard art, graphic stuff, skulls, you know, all this crazy stuff. And then I go into school, and then by the time I graduated, I thought art was, you know, naked females and still lifes. So completely twisted my head. And it took me a long time to get rid of that. And also what I didn't realize, and it's only something the last couple of years, is I think something where I kind of feel like I connect with you is that discovery is my motivation.
Yes.
So if I feel, even when I feel like I'm starting to get like more of a factory producing the same thing, I just want to break away from it and just play. And that's why I think digital for me, since I'm so new to it, has become so exciting. But the problem is when you work with galleries, that doesn't work. They don't want you playing around too much.
Yes, exactly. I mean, that's something which, but I think it's changing as well. Of course, the value of digital art is obviously not as close to what traditional paintings are, but I'm noticing so many galleries, especially the newer ones, or you know, younger people who are handling those galleries, are basically so much more open-minded. But bro, like coming to like your work, I feel like when you just said this about you going through like a classical training and that you felt that it's not working for you, and you know, you took so much time to break out, I feel that that kind of reflects in like the style of your work as well, because that space of that contrast which you had to go through to realize that this is not for you, basically molded your art into a place where you eventually wanted to break out. Because if you didn't go through like, say, a traditional schooling system of the arts, you wouldn't probably be doing such experimental works yourself as well, you know?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So I think it's fascinating that, you know, like, I don't know if you really believe in like the traditional school system. Like, I don't know if you are up for it. Like, if a young budding artist or someone who's starting to start out, if they come and ask you, hey, which school would you recommend me? Do you recommend me to go into school? What would you say? What would your advice be to them?
I think at this stage, it's changed throughout the years. So I've been asked that quite a bit. And I actually taught for a long time too, so I got that question. I think I would ask them, what is it you're interested in, and what do you see the artwork you're creating down the line? What would it look like? For me, I don't. You know, the thing that I think is interesting is in the short time I'm doing the podcast, the majority, if not all, of the people I've interviewed are self-taught. To me, that's fascinating because I've always been surrounded by schooled artists. And I found the common thread is they all have a very distinct style way early on. And that's something you want to develop. I mean, I don't like to use the word style. I'd say voice. You know, it's something connecting your inner to your mind, to your hand, to your canvas, or whatever it is that you're using to create. And so I would caution somebody first and be like, I would do it on your own for a bit, for a few years at least, and see what happens.
Yes. And I think that, like, I think maybe like the people you interviewed, I mean, of course you see their work and you get fascinated by them and, you know, by the works, and of course, like the artist's expression, you know, has a reflection. Like the works are basically a reflection of the artist as well. And I think that because you see that the style is so strange or maybe different, it's not what's usually there. So you clearly can see from the work they produce that they're probably not like traditionally trained or something. You know, like it doesn't have that kind of like rhythm in that. Like, because I think people who are self-taught would not basically, like, for me, I mean, I can say it for myself, I don't follow rules. So like for me, rules, I mean, I just don't understand the concept of rules or doing things a certain way. So I mean, And I think that is what like comes out of my work as well. Like, because I'm not following any rules and I just go strange and weird and like I use such weird ways of creating. I feel that that's what you probably seen the artists you've interviewed with the work as well. And that clearly stands out in terms of the style.
Definitely that. But I also think for me, what I see, because when I was starting to try and break out of what I was doing, I ran across, I think he's some kind of neuroscientist. I can't remember exactly what he does, but he's an Indian doctor named V.S. Ramachandran. And he's an art lover, but he works with amputees. Like he studies like phantom limb syndrome and things like that. So he, at one point, he gave these really interesting lectures where he talked about wanting to see how art affects the brain.
Oh, yes, bro. I know about this scientist. I've definitely seen a few of his videos.
Oh, have you? Okay.
Yes.
And it was interesting because he first starts with where he grew up in India. So he starts with Indian art, looking at the religious statues. And he starts talking about how nothing is perfect. They're exaggerated. These aren't realistic. So he builds his whole hypothesis on actually we don't want to see things too realistic.
Yes, exactly.
And that really rang with because I started looking at the things I liked. I'm like, oh, even if it... You know, if I really look at it, like there's elongated limbs, like, and you can look that through a lot of art, like really things like even artists like Michelangelo or Ong or things like that, it was stylized. Michelangelo is not realism. He was making up muscles.
Yes.
And so all the way down, I started realizing, oh, okay, I like things that seem quirky. I like things that don't look perfect. And I think that's the other thing, right?
And I think that is what happens with like the reason I think art is so, not just visual art, but any form of art is so captivating is that it basically, for maybe the mind, it's like you're opening up another realm. It's like you basically created a hole in the realm, in space, and you ripped it apart. And, you know, there's another realm over there. And over there, all the creatures or the worlds are so different and so unique. And because your brain processes forms and structures in a certain way, when you see it slightly distorted or slightly different or extremely different, you're like, oh man, this is so amazing, you know? You get right sucked into it. And I think it's so attractive and it's almost like being on psychedelics or drugs, I guess, for people when they come across amazing art, especially like twisted art. And I feel like when you just said this, bro, like when you're talking about Michelangelo and how like it's so exaggerated and everything, it's like something which came across me was if you see like all these crazy amazing painters who do realism, who do like extreme realistic art, like that you just cannot distinguish whether it's a real photo. I don't know if you've seen any of them, but
I mean
of course when you see their skills, it's like extremely mind-blowing. I would not even be able to do 1% of what they did. I wouldn't have the patience or the stamina to be able to create that. But if you actually see, like, personally speaking, I mean, it looks visually stunning, but I don't remember a single piece or artist or art which I remember because it never jolted me from inside, you know? It never, like, pulled my heart out, like, you know, because it's exactly the same as a photo. Technically outstanding, but, I mean, emotionally, I don't know, man, like, it just doesn't feel you. It doesn't touch you. And if you see all these amazing art, which comes from within, it immediately connects and it goes beyond your senses. You react to it without logic. Like it's something you see, it touches you. It's an instant reaction. And for me, that is magical. And I feel that it's so mystical and magical that it defies everything with science or the modern world teaches us, you know, that life is full of atoms and how things are interacting with each other, blah, 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 and that everything is material and physical. Nothing is material and physical, man. If a piece of work can touch you in such a deep way, I mean, for me, that is magic and that defies everything. Like no one can explain how that reaction happens. Not even the brilliant scientist or anyone, you know, even through any kind of equation. And I feel that is the power of creativity and the creator who has created us, man. And that's it's just mind juggling for me to see that, you know, we are a part of a system or a creation which enables us to do this and which has an effect on each other in a certain way. Like if I see your work or if I see some other artist's work which moves me, I'm like, how is that movement happening? Like, how does it move me so much that I want to keep looking at it for hours and hours? And it just makes me numb completely.
Yeah, I totally agree, 100%. And something you said that I have to ask, because you have a body of work entitled Psychedelia.
Yes.
Have you ever experimented with psychedelics?
No, bro, never. That's the weird thing, because that psychedelia is... So the thing is that, like, a lot of my friends in my circle are into psychedelics. Like, they're really... They're either into, like... I think the most... I mean, even if they've not taken psychedelics or mushrooms or ayahuasca or anyone, one of them would have definitely been on weed all the time. So all of my friends have been using natural substances, and they've always encouraged me to use, because they feel that, you know, I mean, I'm meant to consume it. But for me, I feel that psychedelia or psychedelics is already within us, and it is already around us. We don't have to consume something for it to penetrate into our neural system to change its effects, so that we have an alternative, we have an alternative experience of reality. I feel we can already achieve it in this state, in this waking state. It is already achievable. The only thing is, you have to work towards it. It doesn't happen in a shortcut, but if you actually work towards it, it can live a longer, it can last forever. Like, it can be like, you can be in that permanent state forever. And so for me, what I've done is that through my work and through my own experience of meditating and just being or just living life the way I do, I've only worked towards being in this state forever where all these dimensions crisscross, and I have no, and it doesn't really matter, because you ultimately realize that all is one, you know, like everything is this one pure organism working and playing with each other. And so for me, I see that life, like everything which happens around us, is a psychedelic experience already. Like, everything around us is a psychedelia. Like, if you just don't give any words to anything, like if you just observe things the way they are and just observe them and just look at them closely, like, for example, I see birds flying right now out of my window, and if you just look at them and not give any label and not give any kind of description to, oh, the birds are flying, just look at that the way it is, just how it is. Man, bro, this is the biggest trip ever. How is a creature designed in such perfection, so it flies in a group, in such coordination, in space-time, with blue colors and like right light reflecting on it, the way it is, and golden and this and that. And holy shit, bro, like, it's crazy.
Is that because I like what you said when you're talking about when you take away the name, like the label of something, and you mentioned meditating. Is that something you got from meditation? Okay, because I meditate daily as well, and that was part of the practice, was taking away labels. Like, when you hear sounds, it's just a sound. It's not metal falling.
Yes, exactly.
So you apply that to your everyday life.
Yes, and so for me, meditation is when I take attention to the source of my mind. So basically, the first part is where I realize that... the first question which came a long time back when I was going through this journey of transitioning into an artist and things happening around me was, the first question was, who am I and who are we? And when you ask that question in the language form, the first question which comes is, oh, you are this body and you are this mind. But if you actually start looking closely, you are not the body and the mind, because the body and the mind keep changing. They keep changing all the time. And they're basically nothing but structures of information, which has been collected in the form of food, in the form of the environment you live in the form of all the knowledge and information in terms of data, which is thrown at you and which we absorb. So I felt that, oh, these things are just aspects of us, but they're not us. So then what are we? So when you start looking deeper and deeper, you start to realize that everything is made up of concepts and structures and concepts and formations of words and language. And we're trying to interpret everything through that. But what if we take out everything? What if we go back to the baby state? Like, when you were born, we had no idea of what knowledge is, who we are. We were just looking at life purely through the eyes of life itself. We did not know this is my mom, like, in the sense that I was not labeling, this is my mother and this is my father and they're going to take care of me. I had no clue, right? Like when we are babies, everything is blank. We're just experiencing life the way it is. And that is how we are supposed to be. Then the society and then the environment around you starts feeding us with information. We start collecting all the information on top of each other. And then we start interpreting life through that lens of information which we have gathered. And all our opinions, our judgments, our actions are based around all those things. But if we remove all those layers, if we just remove all those layers of the onion which we have gathered all around us, and we go back to the baby state, we realize that if you just look at life the way it is, you just realize that you are life itself, and you're not even a human, you're no gender, you're no species, nothing you see around you is the species itself. You are just life experiencing life. That life is experiencing itself through you, like in this particular blob you call human or man or whatever. But again, that's a structure. And of course, we need words to communicate with each other. But if we just start looking at the minutest of the most simplest things around us, we start to realize, bro, that, man, meditation is actually decluttering, removing all these structures we have created, and taking the mind back to where it starts, where it comes from. So, of course, the mind has a source as well, because otherwise it wouldn't operate. There is some electricity which is powering it. And to me, taking the attention back again and again to its source is meditation. And what I have tried to do through my work, like when I'm painting or when I'm just sitting and watching a movie, I try and practice meditation all the time. So meditation shouldn't be, for me, I mean, in my experience, over the years, I've realized that meditation is not where I have to deliberately sit and do meditation. It's a form of being. When you are being, when you are just letting things as it is, you're meditating, because you are going back to your source. Like your attention is completely back diverted into the source of who you are, which is you. So I just feel that, you know, all these clusters of information we have gathered, we don't need to give it any attention. It just, when we just look back at things in the most simplest way, where everything is as is, man, everything is, it's just one organism playing with itself.
Absolutely. Yeah. And yeah, it's funny, something you mentioned about meditation, about not just the thing you do when you sit down and concentrate on it. I remember, and this is only like within the last year or so that I've reached this point where I realized that, like, I use the analogy of like when I used to play sports like basketball, and you have practice and then you have the game. And in practice, you concentrate and you do 100 free throws so that when you're in the game, it becomes automatic.
Exactly.
There's no separation. And it hit me that meditation is like that. Like that.
Exactly, bro.
20 minutes I'm sitting down to meditate is what it is, practice.
Yes. Yes.
And then exactly. I take that out into life. And
yes. Bro, wow. What an analogy, man. Like, that just basically bangs on what I was trying to say in those 5 minutes.
Yeah, it should be all the time, even when you're watching a movie. Or
that's like the natural state. For example, if you were still a baby, like, for example, imagine you were still a baby, you were just born into this world, and we live in that state forever. We live like a baby forever. There's no idea of language, information, nothing inside us. There is no, say, I mean, just imagine, like, it's a weird idea. But how would you be when you live life like a baby? What's happening? When you feel hungry, you respond automatically at that moment. Where you don't think that, oh, I'm going to eat this and this. It's just spontaneous reaction to whatever is arising. You know, when you see beauty, you're like, whoa. When you, when you pee, you cry. or the pee just comes out on its own. I don't know, whatever. Yeah. Like, I mean, it's just so spontaneously reactive. And what you just said is so beautiful that, you know, you practice to live like that. So you basically kind of like unlearning. I feel that meditation, like, you kind of learn the first 15 years to get your mind is directed outside all the time, because that's how it's designed, right? And then the meditation is like the practice of taking the mind back in, like internally. Like, you take the mind and you're like, okay, go back in. So it's like the basketball practice. Like, you're practicing the throws you do. You're like, you're throwing the mind back in. So whenever you're in a situation in life, like when you go out and say someone says something bad to you on your face, and you're like, it doesn't even affect me because he's the same like me, you know? So because you're practicing that, you've trained your mind not to react, right. or whatever it can be. So I feel that it's such a beautiful analogy that, you know, it's this way.
Yeah, absolutely. And because I want to get to where you're at now, which I found fascinating because I had no idea you were in Berlin when we first started talking.
Yes.
How did you go from India to Berlin and why?
No, bro. First, I want to ask you because when I saw that you were in Paris, of course, I've heard you speaking in your previous podcast. I was like, you don't have a French accent. So how come? So I was baffled. I was like, but your name could be French. Vince, I don't know.
It's German. German, yeah.
So you're originally from Germany?
No. So I'm originally from San Francisco.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So my great-grandfather or great-great-grandfather was from Germany.
Oh.
And so I've been in San Francisco my entire life. And it was almost 2.5 years ago now that I moved to France, to Paris, because my girlfriend is Parisian.
Oh, wow. So so that was the reason for you to move to Paris? Or?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Amazing.
Yeah, so I uprooted everything and tried to reestablish out here. And funny enough, that's what kind of started the podcast, because I have a couple of friends who do podcasts out in the San Francisco, and I kind of guest hosted for them. And for a while, they were very encouraging, and I don't understand why, but they were like, man, you should start your own podcast. I'd listen to you. And it was very nice. But I was like, I don't have nothing to say. But when I got here, it was interesting to me because I felt a pretty big difference between European-based artists and American artists. So I thought it would be, so it's kind of my excuse to talk to more people. I like talking to artists.
What was the difference you basically saw between both of them, like the American artists and the...
I felt that American artists have become, in my opinion, far too business-oriented. Of course, I understand the benefit it. We have to be if we're going to do this as our living. There's nothing wrong with it. But I just found when I first moved here that when I started talking to artists, it was about your art. And it would be a long, long time before we started talking about Instagram and follower accounts and things like that. It was refreshing to me. It took me back to, I think, how I felt in school, again, to the idea of like discovery. Like, I don't want to sit here and talk about algorithms. I'd rather talk about, you know, your take on art or something like that.
I mean, but like, how do you find Paris? Like, how are you enjoying the city? The last time I was there was about 15 years ago or something. So, yeah, it's been long since I've been to Paris, but I absolutely loved the city, man. It was amazing.
Yeah, I love it. I still constantly have these moments that are probably a very American thing. But even like yesterday, so like right now, I have a really bad cold. So I've been staying in the house. But yesterday, I was like, you know, I got to go out and get some food. I'm going to go to a fromagerie. I'm going to get some really good cheese. And so I'm just walking down a Paris street, you know, with my headphones on. And it's like, man, I'm so lucky. I'm going to get amazing food right now. Come back to my flat. I'm going to edit my podcast. Then I'm going to do some work and procreate. I mean, the city is just so inspiring.
Man. Yes.
So it's, you know, it's what I don't like the term living your best life or living the dream, but it's kind of what hit me. I'm like, man, I'm in a really good spot in my life right now. And then just, you know, I always think all the little things too. And I'm like, oh man. And then tomorrow I'm talking to Archon. And then, you know, I just talked to Craw. Like it's just, things are really good. And it's good to be, I think, to take notice of those things.
So crazy, bro. That's amazing. Yes. I think Europe, I mean, I feel the same about Europe as well. And that was one of the reasons which inspired me to move here was just the sheer creative energy, man, which you just feel. Yeah. I call it the spirit the city or Europe, whatever you want to say. But I mean, you just feel it instantly when you arrive. And I came here in 2016. I think, or 15. I don't remember, bro. So I basically had a show. I had a project here. And I came to Berlin for 3 or 4 days to be a part of the project. And I mean, me and my family, we travel a lot. Like we used to travel every 2 or 3 months we were out. Whether it was in India or out of India. And whenever we used to travel, we never had a feeling that, you know, we wanted to move anywhere. And so what happened was when I came here for a project, it was a solo trip. When I came here, I was like, man, this city is amazing. What an incredible vibe. it's so weird and so strange. It's not like any other European city. It's not beautiful. And at the same time, it's amazing. Like, I feel the people here are so beautiful, and like I love the energy, and I just absolutely fell in love with the city. And then I went back and I was doing this project called 365 Days of Art, where, bro, like for a year I created, the project was to create one artwork every day for an entire year. So for 1 year, 365 days, I created an artwork every day. And what happened was, when I completed 290 days of the project, my back got injured badly. Like, it was so bad that the doctors started advising that I have to go in for a surgery. And oh, wow. I didn't want to go in for a surgery. I didn't want to get my back touched. And I started showing to like a lot of different doctors, and they just recommended that I have to be on bed rest, because I could not sit, I could not stand. Like, it was so painful and it was so bad. Like, my body just got stuck, and like it was really bad, bro. And so I was asked to rest in bed and just keep lying down for 2 months and go through physiotherapy nonstop every day. And so I, of course, I thought that's the best way. But for me, what was more horrific was that I had completed 290 days of the project, and I did not want to stop it right there. I wanted to complete it. And I did not want to share this with people who are following my work, you know, the audience which follows my work online, etc., because then it would be, you know, be sympathetic to me and stuff like that. So I did not share this story with anyone. And I was on bed rest, and what I did was, I created my setup around my bed. So I started painting while I was lying down. And what really happened was that I went back to square one of, like, day one of starting my work, because when you're lying down and painting, your body is not used to it. You know, you're not used to, I mean, how can you possibly lie down and paint? But I started doing that, and it was so strange, and my muscles and my bones, everything was like all crampled and cranked up and whatever. It was so strange, man. Like, I couldn't create like the first few days properly, and the kind of work I was creating was really bad. But
was
since
it, digital, were you working digital or traditional mediums?
I was doing both, but mostly digital. Like, it was mostly because I started learning 3D, and I thought that you know, it would be a really good way for me to learn new tools. But at the same time, I really wanted to see what would happen if I like start doing this every day. And there were a lot of revelations which happened during the entire process, which I'll get back to you soon. But I mean, the move. So basically, I went out, it took me about 2 weeks. I got back to a nice groove. I got used to like lying down and painting, and I completed the project. The project was over. I did not skip a single day. But what really happened was, at the end of the project, even like when I completed about 70%, I realized that it was so transformative, not just in terms of the quality of work I was doing, but my internal journey. Like, I felt that there was a major shift which happened internally just doing that project. You know, like, I set that up, I did it, but there was a major transformation which happened internally. And I realized that it only happened because I created a space which was uncomfortable for me. And I felt that, you know, like, I set up the challenge, I went into a zone where I was uncomfortable, which was not really a zone where I would really like to be. And that changed a lot for me internally. What, I want to keep doing this. And I started bouncing this idea with my wife. Like, I started talking to her about this. And she was like, let's move out. Let's move out of the city. And I was like, yeah, let's move to like south of India. It's so beautiful there. Like, my parents come from Kerala. So I really wanted to move there. It's a beautiful place, man. One of the most stunning places I've ever been. Like, I would hands down say one of the most incredible places on earth. And I was like, yeah, let's move there. It's so amazing, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, no, let's move out of the country. It's easy to move here. I mean, it'd almost be staying in the same city. Let's move out of the country.
She and upped was, the game.
Yeah, exactly, bro. And I was like, out of the country, where should we move? Like, there's no place. Oh, then I remember, like, the first thing which hit me was Berlin. Because I absolutely fell in love with the city when I came here for those few days. And so I was like, yeah, let's move to Berlin. And she was like, but you've just been there for 4 days. How can you just say you were there like a tourist, you know, like you were just staying in some hotel and you just don't know how it is. Why don't you go there, stay for some time and see how it is? So in 2017, I actually came here January and I stayed here for a month. I stayed at a friend's house. I was doing my laundry, doing my dishes, going grocery shopping. I was working from home, meeting people. And bro, I absolutely fell in love with the city, like living like a local. After a month, I was like, holy shit, this is the place. Like, I'm moving here. This is where we have to move. Like, there was a strong calling again. It was like a cycle. It was like a cycle repeating itself, where it was like the next stage of a journey, next phase, where you basically move out of your nest. And I was like, yeah, we have to do this. So I called my wife. She also came to Berlin. She stayed here for 3 weeks. We also went to Milan to just get an idea of how another city in Europe is. And, you know, we went to Milan and we were absolutely definite that we want to move to Berlin. And yeah, we just went back and applied for the visas, did all the paperwork, and boom, we moved here, man, as a family. And it's just been amazing. And it's just been so, so, so fantastic, bro. Of course, it's not been easy. The way I'm making it sound is so rosy and dreamy.
But yeah, there's always road bumps.
Oh, yes. Major road bumps. Like, because, you know, like back in India, I had an amazing life. Like, you were born into a culture where everything was already set up for you. Here, I had to set up everything again. You know, like, I mean, I had no reason to move. Like, I could easily be staying in India, have a comfortable life. We had people who used to come and cook for us at home. Someone used to come and clean our house, because in India, you have all those luxuries. It's not so expensive in terms of the people, you know, paying people and stuff. So you get all this help, and like the service quality in India is freaking amazing. And here it's the opposite. You have to do everything on your own. I never did my laundry. I never cooked, clean my dishes. I never used to go grocery shopping. I was doing all the stuff which I never thought I would do, bro. And I was enjoying it so much, even though it was taking out time from my daily routine. I mean, of course, I was, before in India, I must be creating like, say, 8 hours a day. Now I create like, say, 6 hours a day. I mean, just giving an example. But right. I mean, I enjoyed it. I was like, this is amazing. Like, why wasn't I doing this in India? Because of course, the environment is not such, you know, you don't need to do that. You're always pampered. And I really started loving this, man. I started enjoying this so much. And, you know, my family came here, had to set up everything from scratch again. And I just felt that, you know, you just go out of your comfort zone, you again learn so much. And you start learning, discovering aspects of you and life and others, which you probably never looked at, you know. Like, for example, one of the things which really fascinates me now is perception, like human perception. Like, we are always in a habit of judging others in terms of how we perceive our journey or how we perceive life. And we are a product of our own journey, right? And for say someone like a hardcore German who was born and raised here is a very sensitive, a very structured person. So when I see people, I'm like, I'm having a perception which is an outsider's perception. So my perception is an Indian perception, where life is not easy. Life is not so secure in India, or it's not so privileged. And over here, people live a very privileged life in Europe or in the Western countries, and they probably don't realize that. But when I see that now as an outsider, I realize that so many things here come with privilege, because you're born here, you're born into the society. And there's so many things which come into India, like, say, culturally, food-wise, family-wise, everything is so strong there, that you're born into that culture. Of course, there are negatives and positives everywhere, but I felt that moving changed so much within me in terms of perception, bro. Like, looking at things from a more holistic, a more all-round perspective than a single individualistic perspective. And for me, that's been super fascinating.
Yeah, I think that's really good for just humans in general. Because that was another thing for me in agreeing to move here, is I constantly try to keep myself in some kind of state of discomfort. I don't want to be too comfortable. And it can be all kinds of things. You know, I mean, for a while I was working out every day or running every day. With art, I don't want to be too comfortable. So I'm trying to find, you know, how can I get in an uncomfortable area so I have to find my way out? And those are all kind of like learning lessons or way to like, you know, callous certain parts of your mind that I think are really beneficial and can play into your art, of course.
But like when you moved to Paris, what have been some of the most internal transformations you've noticed? Because I'm sure in like 2.5 years, you immediately see it. What were some of the things which you never thought or never imagined would shift within you? Or maybe some things you've realized which shifted within you after the moving, which you feel is extremely fascinating or even not, I mean, if something worth sharing.
That's a really good question. I think more of others when I'm here because I'm the outcast. And I think even though a lot of people speak English here, it's very easy to get by. I try not to too much because I found at first it was very difficult for me to not, because I don't speak French, I'm learning, but I couldn't communicate. And now I'm learning to enjoy it because I find it's always a lesson. It's a lesson in humility that I can't, I mean, I remember situations, you know, being in America and running across people who can't speak English too well. And I didn't give them a credit for asking for something so small, like, where can I get a bottle of water? It's so easy for me to say in English. But now that I'm here, man, I can't even ask for like extra ketchup. You know, I don't know how. And so I really sympathize. And that's a small, funny one. But I mean, I've been in situations where, you know, it's not speaking a language. It could have got me in some trouble. So I'm far more sympathetic with that. And the idea, and that's actually bled into the art for me because I just,
I
see all these things as communication. Yeah. And everything's communication. We're communicating visually.
Yes.
So I think a lot more about that now.
So like how has this like influenced your art, like the moving and all these experiences you've been having the past 2.5 years? How do you see personally, like when you see your work over the last 2.5 years, do you see, has it changed? Has it influenced you? Even if for the viewer, it might not have, but do you see it influenced you? How do you see it? Like,
even if somebody else doesn't see it, I'm more open to experimentation. I think for me, there's two reasons. One being so exposed to different art here. I get to go to a lot of museums. I love the Picasso Museum here. You get to see his experimentations that you don't really see in a lot of books and whatnot. But Paris is such a city of layers, I feel like. And that, I think, is really something that's come into my work. Like, I started doing more collage pieces, like I did for a show last year. These collage works on these boxes. I was using a lot of things that I found in the street, like repurposing items. And I was using my photography. I was painting, collaging things I found on the streets. And I realized that I'm being affected by the certain layers, both literally and I think metaphorically. You know, you see like the layers of, you know, in the streets when you pass by, on the walls, the advertisements that they just layer and layer and layer on top of each other. And then they decay and they become these kind of beautiful abstract pieces in and of themselves, you know. So things like that, I think, maybe have affected it.
Incredible, man. Like, and in terms of like, I mean, of course, Paris is a place where there's so much beautiful architecture and culture. In terms of like, you know, like your approach to your work, do you think that has changed? Like, have you seen that happening subconsciously? Like your work shifting a bit here and there? Because like, for me, what was pretty shocking when I saw your work, when you started using Procreate was, of course, when I see you, you are a classical painter, but of course, I mean, I would never imagine you to start doing stuff digitally. Like, you know, like,
oh, I love it.
Yeah. So like, when I saw you, I was like, holy shit. Like, Is that for real? Like, are you actually using Procreate? And for me, first I thought maybe you didn't even like it. But I see you are using it again and again now. And so, of course, you're enjoying it. But, I mean, it's, for me, that is truly fascinating when, you know, creative people are very open-minded and they want to explore other realms or other areas of creating. So, yeah, do you see, like, subconsciously things in terms of your approach, your process, technically anything has shifted as well?
Yeah, definitely. And I, it's put me in a weird, I'm kind of in a tight spot right now artistically, because it's really opened up, like I said, this idea to experiment with things. Problem being is working with galleries, I can't maneuver too far out of that. So I have tons of things that I've done that I have not posted, I have not put out there anywhere, because I can't. I have to maintain, you know, you have to maintain your certain whatever it is you do that people know you for. And that I find really frustrating, especially now going experimenting digitally. And it's not just Procreate. Like, I've been playing around with, because I have a background in music. And I stopped playing music for a long time because I just can't have, I'm a bass player, and I just can't take my guitar with me ever and this and that. And now I've been creating like digital music a lot. Like, I spend so much time on my iPad, it's ridiculous. But you know, that brings up something I wanted to ask you, because, okay, so I had this interesting encounter. This is going to be a semi-long story. First, I'll go back to when I was teaching. And so that was maybe 10 years ago or something like that. And in our departments, in illustration, they had completely switched to digital. And in fine art was the only way you can take traditional painting classes. So a lot of illustrators were frustrated because they didn't want to be solely digital, or they felt that they couldn't work in digital because they felt like you're just mimicking, trying to mimic traditional work. So they needed to work traditionally, which is a fair point. When I got into Procreate, of course, the obvious thing I did was try to mimic my style in traditional work.
Man, like if you don't try Procreate, maybe you can try this as an experiment. I'm sure no one would recognize it's done on Procreate, because when I see your digital works on Procreate, I'm like, how? It doesn't look like digital, bro. It looks traditional. Like,
oh, thanks. But I don't think that's a good thing, though.
I mean, I don't know. Like, it's so amazing that, I mean, of course, it looks a little bit more refined. But yeah. To, like, the first glance, it takes a long time to really see that it's digital. Like, I don't think it even takes a long time, in the sense that because it's so textured and layered, I think that's where it happens. It throws you off.
Yeah. So the point I'm getting at, what do you think about this? Because this brought up an interesting thing to me. So the more that I started working digitally, even when I was playing music, it's traditional instruments, I hated mostly electronic music. And now I'm starting to see digital as its own playing field. I don't even compare it to traditional stuff, but and I hate bringing up the social media thing, but somebody commented on something, a work that I posted, and basically was criticizing, saying, I don't see the point in trying to mimic these traditional things digitally. Just do the real thing if you can do it. And it was interesting to me because I'm like, I don't see it like that. Like, with digital, every mark, even if it's trying to do a brush stroke, I just see it as a digital mark. I don't see it as mimetics anymore. So my question is, you know, how do you feel about that? And it's interesting because you do some traditional work, but you don't have a traditional background. So do you see it as comparative at all, or is it it's entirely its own thing?
Yeah, I think, bro, like it's like when you see someone performing, like in the sense, say when you look at acting, right? Like a performance actor. Can go and play a character and say a story in a movie, in a featured film, in a blockbuster Warner Brothers or Marvel story. Or he can go and say the same, another story and perform and express themselves in an independent film. They can also go and perform in a series of shows on Netflix. They can also go and perform in theater, you know.
Right.
So, at the end of the day, what are they doing? They're basically playing a character, they're expressing that character, and they're telling a story, or they're part of that narrative of a story. And I feel that when you look at that medium, again, this is something which is connected to our human behavior of taking language and interpreting it according to however it fits well. And if you look at like performance artists like that, like actors or whatever, we never judge them according to the medium they're using. We never discriminate that way. But when it comes to like, say, visual art or even music, I see that a lot of people, of course, are very sensitive to that. Like they some are very purists. They see that classical form of creating is like the highest form of painting or creating, and that everything else is just like mimicry or an inferior form. Or some of them have just like it by choice. But this is how I see it. I just see it as a pure form of expression. And I feel that in this infinite universe, when there are so many infinite forms and there's so many ways the nature creates different forms, creatures, plants, trees, colors, environments, why can't we have infinite forms of creativity as well? Just because we are born in an era where technology is at its forefront, we're using technology as a tool, right? If we were not using, we would have been using it, if we were, say, born 30,000 years ago, we would be painting in the caves or maybe on the sand or I don't know, whatever our expression would be. Even at that time, people were painting on leaves, people were painting on pottery, people were painting on caves, people were painting on paper, whatever, they on trees as well, rocks. They were all mediums and they were using different ways of expressing themselves. I feel that ultimately all of us are trying to tell a story. Whether it's an external story or whether it's an internal story, it's a story of life itself. And I feel that we should just purely look at it in that it's the universe expressing itself in the most authentic, beautiful way. And I feel that, like, I mean, something which you just said right now about people categorizing stuff into like different mediums, I feel that, you know, the first reaction for a lot of people is that even without analyzing what the medium is, they would clearly jump into it. Like, for example, when I started painting traditionally, I found digital painting to be more difficult, because the reason digital painting I find to be difficult is because it's not intuitive, it's not natural. Because when you take your hand and you have it on a paper, you have it on the pen or the pencil or a paintbrush, and you interact with the surface, you can clearly see you interacting with a physical tool on a physical surface. But what happens with digital for me personally is that it's a virtual surface. It's not even mimicking gravity, physics. Nothing is real, you know, like it's very hypothetical in its creative form. So when you're painting digitally, it's not even mimicking the way our brains are supposed to interact with touch, with senses of the brush and the pen and the paper. It's interacting in a very virtual, supposedly hypothetical environment. And for me, like, digital has been a more unnatural, difficult process of learning to create than a traditional way. Because the traditional, even though, of course, I mean, it's just very two different things, I feel traditional methods of painting are more natural. Like, it's very intuitive. It doesn't have to be, say, if I'm not a portrait painter, if I'm just an abstract painter, try and paint an abstract painting on digital. It just doesn't happen. And it's so off than a traditional painting because it doesn't come naturally, you know. You are not directly interacting with the surface. You are, the tool is trying to mimic a surface. But when you try and create it, you have to obey the laws of physics of the digital environment. The laws of physics of the traditional environment is completely different from the digital one. So I feel that they're so different from each other that without trying out, one should not comment on it or judge the tools. They're very different. And I feel that even if you don't get there, like this, we've gone a bit deeper into how these two different mediums interact. I feel that art in general is so infinite and it's so beyond exploring. Like, we haven't even scratched the surface of what we can create, what we can do. I think there's so many different mediums and we can do so many things, and we should go and try everything, man. And there's no like boundaries, limit, rules, regulations to anything. It's just fun, play, learning, inspiring each other, and, you know, trying to understand who we are through our work and through these different mediums. I feel that yeah, I just find all mediums to be equally amazing and incredible, man. It's just amazing.
That's perfect. And yeah. I think that's actually a perfect way to end it too.
Yes.
And I would, because there's so much more I want to talk to you about. We barely even scratched the surface with your work. So I would one, like to have you on again.
Yes.
You're okay with that?
Of course,
and
always.
And two, maybe we can do it in person if I get to Berlin.
Yes. So I think
that would be amazing.
That'll be amazing. Like, we should definitely be in touch more often, like speak more. Second, like when you come here or I come there, of course we'll hang out. And I think a conversation for the next episode can bounce off from deeper interactions with each other, man. That'll be really cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Great, man. Well, thanks for taking the time out and for sharing all that with me, man. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, bro. Thank you. Really appreciate it.
Lo-Fi Sight and Sound Podcast is a conversation with an American living in Paris and contemporary European artists, musicians, and filmmakers. You can find us on all streaming platforms. Please rate and review on Apple Podcasts, follow on Spotify, follow on Facebook, follow on Instagram, follow everywhere. We're everywhere. Spread the word. Thanks.